Hi, I'm Lacey Healy. This spring, our neighbors to the north found themselves in a tricky position. They were holding on to a political hot potato, you see, part of a Russian pipeline.
Sanctions were put in place that meant that Canada is not supposed to send it back.
That's Justin Ling. He's a freelance journalist based in Montreal. And here's what happened. See, the Russian state energy company Gazprom had sent out a big turbine engine to the Siemens factory in Canada for repairs. This engine helps pump gas through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline system that fuels Germany. For context, summer is always when routine maintenance happens. People don't need as much energy this time of year. Then usually, the taps are turned back up and gas flows all the way from fields near Russia's Arctic coast back into Germany. But this year, things got a little hairy.
Now, Russia says it can't return natural gas shipments to 100% capacity until it gets this turbine. Germany was so concerned about the possibility of fuel shortages, of rationing, it actually pressured Canada to make an exemption in its sanctions regime in order to send the turbine back.
Germany's ambassador to Canada tells Global News it wasn't an ask taken lightly.
55% of Germany's natural gas comes from Russia.
We do not want to give Russia and Putin the kind of excuse to say, oh, you brought it upon yourself because you do not deliver the turbine.
Ukraine's president did not like this.
This is about common rules. If a terrorist state can squeeze out such an exception to sanctions, what exceptions will it want tomorrow or the day after tomorrow?
One country making an exemption to the sanctions regime could lead to a second country, to a third country, to a fourth country, and ultimately break the solidarity that we've had.
Suddenly, Canada was caught between two allies over this giant piece of gear.
Canada is almost the worst country to be stuck in the middle of all of this because Canada has, especially under Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, this pathological need to do things together, right? You know, Canada has this real multilateral kick. And there are benefits to this. The fact that Canada was able to sort of use that multilateralism to really turn the screws on Russia, I think really has made a massive difference. The flip side of that is that when Germany raised its hand and said, do you mind making a little exemption in those sanctions for, you know, this turbine that Russia says it is definitely going to install and definitely return our natural gas shipments back to 100%, Canada naturally said yes, because Canada doesn't like saying no to its friends.
So in that spirit of friendship, the Canadians gave back the turbine.
Sanctions are aimed not at our allies, but at Putin and his cronies. And that's exactly why we took this difficult decision.
It did not go as planned. Minutes after I stopped talking to Justin, German media announced that Gazprom was going to slow down gas flow to 20% so that it could fix another turbine.
The Russian state-owned firm blames the move on technical problems with one of the pipeline's turbines. Different turbine to the one blamed for the existing reduction in flows.
A total of 6 turbines are supposed to get maintenance in Canada over the next 2 years. Gazprom says that messy international paperwork is making it hard to get its gear back in the field, and that repairing and returning those turbines, it's a matter of operational safety. But Justin says this is all part of a bigger geopolitical play.
There is a calculus going on inside the Kremlin, I think, and it basically goes like this. As long as the war is going on, the Russian economy is going to be ravaged. It is more valuable to them to exert this political control than it is for them to actually sell this fuel.
The CEO of Gazprom recently said in St. Petersburg that there was an elegant solution to all of the difficulties with Nord Stream 1. Just let Russia pump gas through that other pipeline project that was recently killed, Nord Stream 2. Justin says it is possible that Russia's math on this could work.
There is still a chance that Europe will ultimately decide that its long-term viability is better impacted by partnering with Russia on natural resources than it is in defending a democratic, liberal ally in Ukraine.
But he thinks that more likely, Russia's calculus will backfire big time.
This winter is going to be touch and go. But I think what Germany is saying, and I think quite rightly, is that this will be the last winter where that fear is this acute.
85% of Europeans believe that the EU should reduce its dependency on Russian gas and oil as soon as possible to support Ukraine.
I think Russia has essentially hastened Europe's turn to energy independence and shortened that timeline by years, if not decades. Geopolitics can be a surprisingly motivating factor when it comes to energy sources and you know, long-term energy sustainability.
And the stakes to do that now, they're high.
At an emergency meeting in Brussels.
The European Commission proposes its members cut gas usage by 15% between August and March.
For 8 months, this is the real deal.
Emergency plans written up in really emergency circumstances.
And they're talking in some towns about turning like basketball arenas into warming centers for elderly and vulnerable people.
Amid recent escalations and possible Russian war crimes in Ukraine, the EU is trying to rid itself of Russian gas as quickly as possible.
Europe is more motivated than ever to diversify its energy sources. But what does that have to do with the North? Well, it turns out a lot. Katie Toth reports.
What if millions of Black Americans had been compensated for slavery? Join me, Trymaine Lee, as I explore the untold story of one of the only Black Americans who ever was. I talk to his descendants and discuss how reparations forever changed their family's trajectory and imagine a reality where reparations are paid to the rest of Black America. Into America presents Uncounted Millions, The Power of Reparations, a Black History Month series. New episodes drop Thursdays. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Cruise uphill on Tromsø's local gondola and you'll peer down on a cute little Arctic village full of students, fishermen, and art exhibits. It doesn't come off as the kind of place that would house a decommissioned nuclear sub-base carved into a mountain, something that sounds like it's straight out of a James Bond movie. But as the ships weave their way in from the Norwegian Sea to Tromsø's port, you realize this is also a city of connections. Tourists line up at the airport. This is their last stop before the high Arctic islands of Svalbard. Students sit in cafes arguing about European literature. And foreign ministers, ambassadors, and scientists, they're all gathering this May to talk about what's next for the North at the city's big annual conference.
We meet during the season of light, surrounded by darkness. Welcome to Arctic Frontiers 2022.
We're here to discuss the Arctic right now, but what's on so many European minds is energy and the crisis that they're crashing into.
It's the summer and the winter is coming.
And our energy prices are rocketing.
The dependency from external energy sources, also external energy sources which come from authoritarian regimes.
In the urgency to move off Russian energy, Europe has gotten pretty desperate. Germany has started up old coal plants again, and it's talking about pausing the phase-out for nuclear power it was going to do this year. Meanwhile, just turn on the news and you can see how the country I'm sitting in is racing to help.
Norway, Europe's second biggest exporter behind Russia, has been pushing up production to help the European Union.
Terje Aasland is Norway's Minister for Petroleum. One thing Norway has committed to do is continue pumping at just about 100% of production capacity over the summer. That should help, is that right?
Yes, I hope so. In this critical situation, I think the most important thing Norway can do is to be a stable, reliable producer for oil and gas.
And this move, it is making money. The value of Norway's Arctic offshore LNG deposits has skyrocketed. Profits from the state-owned energy company Equinor power up socialized medicine, education, the public welfare system. And in the second quarter this year, Equinor's net income was more than three times what it was in the same period last year.
We posted some strong results this morning, 17 billion of adjusted earnings.
You must have watched this unbelievable pivot we've seen from policymakers, from our political masters. One minute, they want you to get out of ONG as quickly as possible. Next minute, they're saying, how much can you produce for me?
This windfall has led to a new tension in Norway. See, humanitarian aid is one of the cornerstones of Norway's statecraft. And now Norwegians have to ask, is our country war profiteering? Should this money be sent to help refugees, or should it be helping local Norwegians who've seen their own energy prices skyrocket over recent years? And alongside this, there's an ongoing question. How long can this country keep making fossil fuel money when we know climate change is happening as we speak? That's why some advocates say Europe's energy security push has to go green. At the conference, Martin Summerkorn with the World Wildlife Fund said the conflict with Russia could actually make this easier for Europe to do.
For the next decades, there is an estimate of $1 trillion being invested in the Arctic. Lots of that is actually supposedly be hydrocarbon developments in the Russian north.
See, Russia has invested a lot in building itself up as an Arctic energy powerhouse. And for years before, on regulatory meetings or discussions about freezing extraction in the Arctic, it was not super pumped on those ideas, but now it's not going to be in those meetings anyway.
There's a real opportunity for those countries who seek for solutions to actually do better than they could have done with dragging Russia along, to put it this way. The same is true for environmental regulations. We see actually through the sanctions, environmental regulations in Russia being bent. Why don't the rest of the Arctic countries use this opportunity to be even better?
It's not ideal, but maybe there is lemonade to be made from lemons here.
And so I think this transition actually will not get a break, and it might actually get some resolve from the world uniting around global issues.
In May, the European Commission announced a plan worth hundreds of billions of dollars focused on speeding up Europe's green shift so that it won't need Russian energy. But green energy will also take energy.
Energy, a big topic in the background of the war, and here Arctic can play a huge role.
Virginijus Sinkevičius, the EU Commissioner for the Environment, outlined his government's vision on a panel. Get off Russian Arctic fuel, thanks in part to European Arctic resources.
If we want to reach our decarbonization goal, for many of the solutions, we're going to need minerals. And minerals can be found here.
It's not just minerals in the Arctic that can help with decarbonization. The demand for electricity will also go up as we all go off oil and gas, making a space for more renewable energy, water power, hydrogen, geothermal, and wind. But asking the Arctic to provide this energy isn't always simple. In fact, that last one, wind power, can sometimes get surprisingly controversial. Because while Europe is fighting for its energy security, Sami people are fighting for their cultural sovereignty.
It has been talks about just transition, the so-called green transition, and there is nothing just about killing a culture.
That's coming right up.
All votes must weigh equally, not just the votes of those with the greatest financial ambitions and thickest wallets.
As the first day of Arctic Frontiers began, 17-year-old Suna Svensson's voice shook when she took her turn at the mic.
I'm a member of the Youth County Council in Troms and Finnmark. As a Sami youth, I have one important message today. We must stop the continuous encroachment on nature in the Arctic.
Suna said it's not enough to look for green energy if we do that while we keep consuming more and more and more.
Our energy consumption and climate emissions know no bounds. We have to start thinking of alternatives, but it makes no sense to sacrifice the most vulnerable areas in Norway, which also happen to have special protection as indigenous areas.
That sacrifice she's talking about? She has something specific in mind. Sami, a group of indigenous northerners in Arctic Europe and Western Russia, have been fighting their respective governments for a long time over the rights to their land. And in the Nordics most recently, that fight is often over massive wind farms on their territory. In Norway, a 2021 ruling found that the Norwegian state energy company didn't properly consult with the Sami group, and the turbines that it had built near that community would have to eventually come down. Across the border in Sweden, a huge wind project is scheduled to finish in 2025, one that will also encroach on Sami reindeer herding land. Not all Arctic wind projects are on Sami territory, but Beska Nilius says the ones that are could be nails in the coffin of an ancient way of life.
This island is like reindeer free. There is so much infrastructure and every inch is already occupied by buildings. But when you look around and see all the mountains you see, all of it is reindeer land, everywhere.
Beska and I step outside the conference to talk, smoke, stare at the Tromsø Harbor. He's an alternate member of the Sami Council, which brings together Sami from Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Western Russia. He's also an indigenous activist and an artist from the Norwegian community of Finnmark.
So nearby the Russian border on Norwegian side and the Finnish border.
He tells me this island city of Tromsø.
It's called Romsa in Sami.
It has been used by both Sami and Norwegians for millennia.
This is like very old mixed communities has been here, but we have always been utilizing and using the land.
And the most important way that Sami use the land is by herding reindeer.
That is a very important culture bearer for the Sami culture. Is able to utilize like every inch of the land there is, and it also migrates widely to be able to do that.
But the reindeer doesn't migrate as widely as it used to. Sami lands over the years have been encroached on by industrial development.
We have not an inch more to give because it has been taking so much land over the years. It's time to stop now.
A spokesperson for One Wind Project in nearby Sweden told Deutsche Welle that reindeer don't really mind these farms once they're installed.
We saw 20 reindeer sleeping beneath a rotor. In general, wild animals like to collect under the wind turbines, which draw the air up, so there are fewer insects, especially mosquitoes.
Beska tells me that's not what his community has seen. Instead, he says reindeer, especially pregnant females, avoid these turbines from many miles away.
Basically, as long as the turbines are in sight. So each turbine takes up many, many square kilometers, and by that locks grazing land that is already very sparse because of other industry and development that has happened over the years.
With climate change, reindeer grazing lands have become icy, meaning these animals are already struggling to poke their noses through and get into their food.
And now we are also supposed to pay the price with solving the climate crisis by giving even more land. So it's a double burden in that regard. We are affected both by the climate crisis and also are supposed to pay the price with the solutions. So, and it's not fair at all.
The EU Arctic strategy specifically points to the Arctic as a place with the resources it needs for a green transition, both from EU members like Finland and from partners like Norway. Probably the more obvious example of where that's poised for conflict is with mining for critical minerals. The Commission specifically says other players are pulling in resources from the north. They've got to get in on this too. But wind, it's such a clean resource. Exactly the kind of clean energy that supporters say could help Europe turn away from Russian fossil fuels.
People recognize that they want wind power to power their homes, but they just don't want the wind turbine outside their own house or anywhere near. How do you get over NIMBYism?
We heard the debates today that they think this is a easy solution. We just have to talk and then we can agree. But it's very difficult when they have been taking the land for so long that there is no more to give.
Beska says too often these conversations are framed like Sami people just need to be helped along toward progress.
They have to come up with solutions where the energy is needed and not put the burden on us.
It sounds like you're saying that this is a firm no and that they seem to think it is a beginning of a negotiation.
Yeah, it's a firm no, no doubt.
Okay. What do you think should happen instead?
Yeah, the world needs to fix its own problems and not lay the burden on indigenous peoples. A very important step now would be to go away from this grotesque capitalism that the world is run on and this huge and long, crazy consumer links that exists, like products being made in China and shipped over here. We should be more I struggle with English now.
How would you say it in Norwegian?
Not even in Norwegian.
Is that me?
Yeah, I would say that me ferret paikka lats traut itajashi ja me ferret maitai pähkälatsat heivetit tai choutose. Yeah, now I can maybe put it in English. We have to move managements from the national and global levels and actually adapt to what the land can bear and not what the capitalist wants to earn. And we have to have local solutions to global problems.
And locally, his community has suddenly found itself very isolated. Neighbors and friends had just been starting to reunite across the border with Russia after the pandemic when the war began.
Yeah, it has a direct impact on our daily work. We collaborate across the borders on a daily basis. So that has gotten much more difficult now with the sanctions and also the new laws that the Russian regime has put on the population on the other side of the border. Like, it's criminalized to even speak out about opposing the war.
It seems like during times of war or crisis, indigenous people in Russia face greater backlash even just for being themselves. Like, is that something that you've seen, and is that something that worries you? Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you are wrong. It has been like more strict surveillance and monitoring of also us when we have meetings on the Russian side. There is always some official coming to just see what we are talking about and just have an eye on us. And that has increased in the later years.
That surveillance is important context when you see recent events, like Russia's official indigenous group promoting the war, or like one Sami settlement in Russia that dressed up reindeer with blankets bearing the letter Z, the propaganda symbol used to express support for Russia's invasion. Just recently, a Russian Sami activist opposed to the war fled to Norway and claimed asylum.
So it's dangerous for our people. So we have to be careful, but we are trying to maintain the relationship, even though it's much harder now, obviously, than it has been before.
Just a few blocks away from all these conversations, Tromsø is home to a weirdo little art house cinema. Folks say it's Norway's oldest cinema in operation. And while I'm in town, I notice David Cronenberg's Crash is on the calendar.
Crash victim?
Yes. There seem to be three times as many cars as there were before the accident.
I need to see you, Ballard. I need to talk to you about the project.
The 1996 movie?
Beyond Pleasure.
There are horn dogs for auto collisions.
Beyond Pain.
It sparked a lot of outrage when it came out.
Beyond Obsession.
Movie critics described this kind of film with words like challenging. But when I step out of the dark theater back into the nighttime sun, Cronenberg's world feels kind of simple. For an hour and a half, James and Catherine Ballard aren't trading off between climate annihilation or culture annihilation or, oops, we put more money into Vladimir Putin's war chest again, annihilation. They're just racing toward their own death because they want to. For Inkstick Media, I'm Katie Toth.
Things That Go Boom is distributed by Inkstick Media and PRX. This episode was produced by Katie Toth, with a little bit of help from me. It was edited by Nikki Galtelin, Christina Stella, and Sahar Khan. Our theme song for this project is by Pilk Silk, and background tunes are by Nanook. Additional music for our show was by Darian Shulman. And as always, Robin Wise makes each episode glow brighter than the Northern Lights. Suna Svensson, who you heard at the start of the second half of the show, she wrote an article for us about Sami land and just transition. You can read it at inkstickmedia.com. Thank you to Christoph Steifis at the University of Colorado, Denver, for helping us with some of the details about Nord Stream 1 and Europe's response to these gas shutoffs, and to Troy Bouffard at the Center for Arctic Security at the University of Fairbanks, Alaska, for clarity on Russia's energy industry in the Arctic. Also to Soili Niistenharala, Kasper Sulecki, and Anthony Froggett for answering questions on Norway's energy policy. And thanks to Silver Sound Studio for their help with recording this episode. Thank you also to the supporters and foundations that make our work possible, the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Plowshares Fund, as well as Inkstick supporters, including the Coulomb Foundation, Craig Newmark Foundation, Prospect Hill Foundation, and the Jubitz Family Foundation. And thank you to the Royal Norwegian Embassy for providing support for our trip to Arctic frontiers. If you're listening and you like what we do, please don't forget to head on over and leave us a review. And come visit us anytime on social at Inkstick Media. That's it for Cold Front, but don't go far, because a brand new season of Things That Go Boom is headed your way this fall. We'll see you right back here soon. And in the meantime, stay cool out there.
Just sitting in front of the AC all day until my throat is just like sandpaper.